Can you hear me? Okay, great. Yeah, so I just went to a workshop at IPAM where all the talks were given by computer scientists, but half of them were actually at the blackboard. So there seems to be a trend where the computer scientists are pretending to be mathematicians, and the mathematicians here seem to be pretending to be computer scientists. But I decided to take the logo of the Fields Institute very seriously. I was encouraged to do so. So I'm going to be doing a number of things in this talk. I'm going to be talking briefly about sort of a, what you might think of as a general mathematical framework for doing efficient discrete log-based cryptography. I'm also going to intersperse a number of open questions of what we'd like to know and can't yet do. So these might be good questions for people to work on. And at the end, I'm going to talk a little bit about embedding degrees and pairing-friendly elliptic curves and abelian varieties, and sort of a proposed generalization of the classical method for finding pairing-friendly elliptic curves. It probably won't work, but at least I'll put it out there. Let you break it. Okay, so what we want to do is look at cryptography in extension fields. So we're going to look at cryptography in FQ to the R cross, or an elliptic curve over FQ to the R, or maybe an abelian variety over FQ to the R. So what we're doing is we're looking at the F, you should view this as the, or you can view this as the FQ to the R points of the multiplicative group, or an elliptic curve, or an abelian variety. But if you like, you can also view that as the FQ points of the restriction of scalars from FQ down, from FQ to the R down to FQ of the multiplicative group, or an elliptic curve, or an abelian variety. So the Weyl restriction of scalars has been used in cryptography in a number of different ways. And a number of people have worked on it. So I'll mention some names. So for example, Fry, Beam, Gaudry, Hess, Smart, Galbraith, and I guess some of the things I'm going to talk about today are some work of Carl Rubin and myself, and if I hope I haven't left out too many relevant people who might actually be in the audience. Oops. And the other thing I noticed is that I don't believe that anybody's actually used these blackboards before at the Fields Institute, because they're not very well oiled, and they don't move. Okay, so let's put this in a slightly more general setting. So more generally, what we're looking at is we're looking at, so I should say here that if you're not a mathematician, you might want to sort of pay attention and be amused and then tune in later when I start talking about embedding degrees. So I will get back to you later, but let's just make things a little bit more general now, and you can ignore this if you like. Well, if you like, instead of ignoring it, just think of elliptic curve or multiplicative group of a finite field. And that's what you should think of whenever you see a V. So V can be more generally a commutative algebraic group over field K. We're only going to care about it for finite fields, but let's be more general for now, because this means a lot of what I'm going to say is true in general. If you like, just think elliptic curve or multiplicative group of a finite field. We're going to take an extension field, so our FQ to the R, but it might not be a finite field. We're just going to take some extension, and for simplicity, we're going to assume it's cyclic. So we have a Galois extension, the Galois group is cyclic. Our notation will let R be the degree of L over K, and we're going to, for simplicity, assume that it's square free. And we'll let G be our Galois group of L over K, so it's cyclic, it's order R, and if we need it, we'll let, and when we need it, we'll let tau be a generator for that cyclic group. Okay, so the restriction of scalars from L down to K of V, well, all you really need to know about it for now is that it's an R-dimensional commutative algebraic group over K. And if you look at the points over the ground field, K, you get a group that's isomorphic to the group of points V of L, where L is the upper field, the extension field. So a number of things that we're going to find useful? Well, so the first thing I'd like to do is I'd like to throw away the restriction of scalars by reducing to some subgroups that we'll call the primitive pieces. So we can take the restriction of scalars, or one can take the restriction of scalars of V, and up to isogeny, so it's isogenous to the rec sum of pieces that I'll call V sub F for all the intermediate fields F between K and L. So there's an isogeny defined over K. We'll call these V sub F the primitive pieces, the primitive subgroups. And I'll tell you a little bit about these V sub F, but the point is that you can reduce the study of cryptography over extension fields to the study of all the V sub F for all the intermediate fields F. Okay, so what are these V sub F? So if I let D be the degree of F over K, so if K is a finite field, maybe I like the notation better to just call it V sub D instead of V sub F. Since, you know, you have your field K is FQ, and L is FQ to the R, and so the V we'll just call V sub D. And so in that case, we have the restriction of scalars from FQ to the R down to FQ. Of V is isogenous to the direct sum of the V sub Ds for D dividing R. Okay, so we can reduce to these V sub Ds. And let me tell you some, well, the definition and some properties. Or V sub Ds or V sub, let's stay general, so I'll call them V sub F for now. Okay, so what do we know about them? Well, they're commutative algebraic groups. If you started with an abelian variety, you end up with an abelian variety. If you started with an elliptic curve, you end up with an abelian variety. So recall V sub D is the deep cyclotomic polynomial that we've seen in other lectures. So if you like, so you can define V sub F in any of the following ways. You could define it, if you like, to be the kernel of phi sub d of tau, where you view that as an endomorphism of the restriction of scalars. Or if you prefer, and this is how it's done maybe in some of the cryptography papers, you can look at the intersection of all the intermediate fields between k and f not equal to f. You can take the kernel of the norm map. So it's the things of norm 1 down to all the intermediate extension fields. And you can also view it as the kernel of slightly different norm maps. Let me write that. So norm, where you're viewing the norm map from restriction of scalars from F down to K of V to restriction of scalars from M down to K of V. But if you want to sort of see this more concretely, and I meant to announce two more conferences. There's another IPAN conference where you get to see whether the mathematicians or the cryptographers use the blackboard or the computer. At IPAM, October 9th through 13th, Number Theory and Cryptography Open Problems, followed by a one-day conference at UC Irvine. So you have to kind of get yourself from LA to Irvine, which is a very short distance, and depending on traffic, can be a shorter or long trip. The next day, Saturday, October 14th. So there are web pages for both of those, and you can look those up. Now, if you want to take, let's say, the K points of this variety, V sub F, well, you're taking the K points of the restriction of scalars, which I told you was the L points of V. So now you're taking the kernel of this map on V of L. And you can see, well, let me just say, so that's V sub F of K, you can view as the kernel of this map on V of L, which in the case where, so if V is prime, you can see this is just the trace zero subgroup by definition. So it's a trace zero subgroup if D is prime. So this brings us back to trace zero subgroups that you may have seen before, say for abelian varieties. Let's see, further properties, the dimension of V sub F is phi of d times the dimension of v. V sub f is isomorphic over f to phi of d copies of the original variety v. So in particular, we can conclude that v is connected if and only if v sub f is connected. And so what this is saying is that v sub f is a twist of this power of v. So it's a certain twist of the power of the original variety v. So we're saying the restriction of scalars is built up from twists of powers of the original variety. Okay, and let me just throw in just for fun. If you like, you can view v sub f, or let's say v sub l can be viewed as, let's write it, psi sub r of tau v square brackets g tensor v, where I'm viewing this as a Galois module, where psi sub r of x is the polynomial, take x to the r minus 1, divide out by the rth cyclotomic polynomial, so you get a polynomial in z square bracket x, that with in a certain suitable tensor category where this makes sense, you can define it in this way. And for that, I suggest seeing the recent preprint of Mazur, Rubin, and myself called, I think, Twisting Commutative Algebraic Groups. So it's just a different way to view this that maybe puts this in context. Okay, another property that turns out to be useful, in particular in cryptography, is if you take the characteristic polynomial of Frobenius, or a characteristic polynomial of an element of the Galois group acting on these varieties. What happens when you go from the characteristic polynomial associated with the variety to the characteristic polynomial associated with these primitive pieces, v sub f? So let's say L is a prime. Let's say G is in the Galois group, the absolute Galois group, so take a separable closure of K over K, so say FQ bar over FQ. And suppose you have your characteristic polynomial of G. And suppose you can factor it over some extension field into product X minus alpha I. Let's say this is the characteristic polynomial of G, let's say acting on the L torsion of the original variety V. So that's what you're given. Now you want to take the restriction of scalars up to some larger extension, take these primitive pieces. What can you say about the characteristic polynomial there? So you can just write it down in terms of what you already have here. I'm going to write it as x product x minus alpha I zeta to the phi of r over phi of e. Product over the same i's, same alpha i's. And now zeta product over zeta running through the primitive e roots of unity. I'll tell you what e is in a second. And this is going to be the characteristic polynomial of G acting on the L torsion of V sub f, the primitive piece, where E is the order of take G and restrict it to the Galois group of F over K. Okay, so that's just a formula for how the characteristic polynomial changes. And now let's go back to cryptography. Let's take some examples, and let's see what's going on in these examples. Okay, so first of all, let's restrict to the case where the dimension of V is 1. So for example, V is an elliptic curve, or the multiplicative group GM. Those are the two examples that we care most about. So then the dimension, and so let's say we're looking at over finite fields. So I'm now going to call the V sub F, V sub D's, and I'll call V sub L, V sub R, as before, as I said I would. So this dimension is now phi of R. And I said we'd like to discuss doing efficient discrete log-based cryptography. So what we'd like to do, so overextension fields. So what we'd like to do is we'd like to compress things so that what we're transmitting is as small as possible. So we would like to represent elements of V sub R, or I should probably say V sub R of K, so V sub R of FQ now, using phi of R elements of FQ, which is the smallest you would expect because that's the dimension. One way to think of that is that what you want are low degree maps between V sub R and affine space of dimension phi of R. Low-degree maps are maybe just rational maps. They may not be defined everywhere. There may be a small set of points where they're undefined. So you would like, say, a map maybe in this direction, let's say of degree m. And if you have such a thing, what good does it do you? Well, that means that you can use FQ to the phi of R, so phi of R elements of FQ, and then if this is a degree m map, you're introducing some ambiguity. So there are, say, m inverse images to each point. So you want to be sending a few extra bits that tell you which inverse image to choose. So a few extra bits, so you want log m extra bits that you have to throw in order to recover which inverse image you have. So this is to represent elements of VR of FQ. So let me give some examples. Okay, so example one. So let's start with, as usual, multiplicative groups of finite fields. So V is GM, and now the V sub R's are going to be algebraic tori. So V sub R is an algebraic torus. Which means that if you go up to some extension field, it's isomorphic to, it splits into a product of copies of GM. So that's what it means to be an algebraic torus. So now if R is a product of at most, well, I said square free, but if not square free, then it doesn't have to be square free, but a product of at most two prime powers, then we know that we can do what we're trying to do with degree one maps. And I should actually reference this. This would be Kliachko and maybe also Voskosensky. So for example, concretely in terms of doing cryptography, the T2 and Cayley cryptosystems make use of a degree one maps in both directions. In other words, a birational isomorphism between the V sub R's in the case where V is a multiplicative group and the appropriate affine spaces. So let me just, to make it very concrete, let me take the example where R is 2, so this is the T2 cryptosystem. All we're saying is that, well, we have a map this way and a map defined almost everywhere this way, and basically this is just Hilbert Theorem 90 says that if you take the following C plus D, let me first. So what are we doing? We're taking R as 2, so we have FQ squared, which if Q is odd, we can write as FQ adjoins some square root, let's say square root of capital D, where D is in FQ, so if Q is odd. And then I can take something in here, which I'm viewing in the restriction of scalars, so the K points of that are the FQ squared points of V. So I can take something in here and write it as C plus D square root of capital D, send it to 1 plus C over D, and to go in the other direction, I can take this map, and these give me, Hilbert Theorem 90 says that those do the right thing and give me birational isomorphism between V2 and A1, so these are degree one maps. And you can do the same thing. For example, for V6, Okay, so we said the T2 crypto system, we have a birational isomorphism between V2 and A1. The Cayley system, we're basically taking V6. So you can view these basically as compression maps. Let me just do it like this. A compression map that takes V6 and compresses it into A2. Diffie-Hellman is just an example of this. Generally, the case R equals 1 is just the classical case. In this case, R equals 1 is Diffie-Hellman. And here we have a birational isomorphism between V1. V1 is just GM now, which is almost the same as A1, except for one point. So that's your birational isomorphism. XTR falls into this same system. It's a compression map on V6. That's one way to view XTR. So XTR is actually a compression map of V6 modulo a certain action of the symmetric group on three letters. And it says XTR is using the trace map. From FQ to the 6 down to FQ squared is a birational isomorphism from this quotient variety to A2. The Lukov-based crypto systems are giving you V2 modulo a certain action of F2. Is birationally isomorphic to A1. There's a Gong-Harn cryptosystem, which in this language can be interpreted as V3 modulo S3 being birationally isomorphic via two symmetric functions to A, naturally to A1 cross A1. So these are all birational isomorphisms. These give you the degree 1 maps that you're looking for. So the ideal case is where our degree M is small. In these cases, these are all degree 1 maps. And there's a conjecture that you can do this more generally. Okay, so there's a conjecture of Voskresensky. Which you can view as saying that you can do this for all R. So there's a birational isomorphism between this primitive subgroup V sub R and affine space of the correct dimension, namely C of R. And an application of this would be to compress pairings, compress pairing values. So we saw, so where this is known is where, let's say, the case of 6. So we saw, David's talk this morning, where embedding degree, we looked at embedding degrees, we had K running up to, 38 or something. So, for example, K equals 30 is an example where you might want to apply this to get a good compression of pairing values. So you can compress pairing values, for example, for k equals 30. If you were doing k equals 6, you could, for example, as was stated in Mike Scott's talk, you can use XTR. Or for k equals 2, you can use the Lukov-based systems for your compression. For k equals 6, we don't know a way to do that. We don't know an efficient compression, or we don't know a very efficient compression. The best compression you could hope for would come from something like knowing the Voskresensky's conjecture was true with effectively computable maps in both directions. Or your birational isomorphisms, and that would allow you a very efficient compression of pairing values when you're in the case of embedding degree 30, for example, which would be a good, that would be the next the next time when you can get a good compression. Okay, so now let's take another example. So this is the case of GM. Let's consider the example of elliptic curves. So now V is an elliptic curve, which we'll call E. Okay, so let's just take a familiar case. So what's E1? So in that case, we had V1 was just GM, and we reduced to Diffie-Hellman. In this case, E1 is just standard elliptic curve cryptography. And what we have now is standard elliptic curve compression, which is just take, you have your two coordinates, which for some reason in my notes I have as S, T, and you map it to the X coordinate. So you map F, T to F. This is a degree 2 map. So this is just to show you something familiar, and we're going to do something analogous. It's a degree 2 map, and we use FQ cross, we send one bit to tell us what sign of the Y coordinate to take. So FQ cross 0, 1 to represent elements via the x-coordinate. So that's something familiar that we've seen before. Okay, so let's just go on to the next case. R equals 2 is also, in fact, something fairly familiar. So here we have E2, and we can map it again to A1. Now, E2, we said, we're thinking of as being inside the restriction of scalars from, let's say, FQ squared down to FQ of E. So we can, if we take the FQ points of this, we end up with the FQ squared points on E. In other words, if we have a point here, we can write, we have X and Y coordinates where those coordinates are in the extension field. We can view them as being in the extension field. But that means that I can write, let's write S as S0 plus S1 square root of D, exactly as we did on a board that's no longer here. Remember, FQ squared we were writing as FQ adjoint square root of D. We did that in the GM case. We can do that whenever we feel like. So we'll do that again here, as long as Q is odd. And here we're going to map this to S0. And again, we have a degree 2 map. But here you wouldn't really actually want to do this, all because E2, it turns out, is isomorphic to the quadratic twist of the original curve E. So this is just giving the same thing as we had over here, except for the quadratic twist. And in the end, what you want to do is you either want to choose E or you want to choose the quadratic twist, whichever works out better, so whichever has, say, the right embedding, the best embedding degree for whatever your application is. So use either E or the twist. So the twist over FQ squared, whichever is better in this case. Okay, so what happens when R is 3? And then you're using the definition of E2, which is things of norm 1, which is giving you a condition here, and that's determining it. Yeah, so that's what's going on here. So this is a phi, and we always have a phi of R dimensional space, and that's the important question. How do you go backwards? So in this case, I'll leave it as an exercise, go backwards. Good question. Go backwards. You can see, so here, remember, we threw in an extra bit, allowed us to go backwards. Same thing here. You throw in an extra bit, allows you to go backwards, but you have to use here the fact that you're in the things, remember, the kernel of the norm map, which, we're in the additive case, so it's the fact that this has trace 0 under the addition law of the elliptic curve, and that formula allows you to go backwards. Okay, and so then that gets to be much more crucial for R equals, say, 3, or R equals 5. So that's where I'm not going to tell you how to go backwards, and it's not such an easy exercise, so I'll refer you to a paper of Carl Rubin and myself from Crypto 2002, and a later paper in which we give more details showing the decompression algorithm. Okay, I'll tell you the map, but I'm not going to tell you how to go backwards because it's more complicated. And the map, okay, so again, well, so what do we have now? We have FQ cubed. So we're just, as usual, let's write that as FQ, let's say, square bracket Z modulo some polynomial F of Z that's irreducible over FQ, degree 3. And then we can use 1z and z squared is the basis for this field over FQ, as usual. And we can write S with respect to that basis, so we'll write it as S of I z to the I running from 0 to 2, Si's are in the ground field. And I just want to map this to S1 comma S2. So we drop S0, we, as usual, we drop the y-coordinate, that's our compression map. And what we showed, so this is Rubin-Silverberg compression from originally from Crypto 2002. What did we show? We showed that this map has degree at most 8, and we can compute inverse images. So we can decompress. So we can efficiently, and we have an algorithm for doing that, we can efficiently compute inverse images. And so what we're doing is you end up over here, you get two elements of FQ, and then you need some number of extra bits. I guess in this case you need 3 extra bits to reconstruct. So one for the y-coordinate and two to reconstruct as zero. So this is to represent elements of what's now the trace zero subgroup. So this is E3 of FQ, where we're thinking we're using the arithmetic and the elliptic curve over the extension field. Okay, so since I took R square free, the next case of interest is going to be R equals 5. And again, we can do this. It's more complicated. And you have to throw in more bits to do the reconstruction, and you get a higher degree function. So here we have E5. The same compression map works. So we have ST. We do it as above. S is summation Siz to the I. We're now going up to 4. And we're going to map it to S1. We're again going to drop S0 and the y-coordinate. And I claim that what you get is a map of degree at most 54, and we can decompress. We can efficiently, and we have an algorithm that we implemented that allows us to efficiently compute the inverse images. And so what we're doing is you end up using FQ to the fourth, and you have to throw in 6 extra bits, so 5 to reconstruct S0 and 1 for the y-coordinate, to represent elements of this trace zero subgroup, F5 of FQ. And again, you're doing everything with an elliptic curve over the extension field. So even though this is an abelian variety of dimension 4, you're actually doing all your arithmetic just with elliptic curve arithmetic, but over the extension field. You never actually have to use the abelian variety. I should say an application is this allows you to compress Bonnet-Lynn-Shockham short signatures. So this will allow you to compress it down to 4/5 of their regular size for the same security over the extent if you're over an extension field. So open question is, can you go any further? Can you do anything higher than 5? So we were not able to do that. Let me write this as an open question. So one question is, well, you know, there's the obvious there's the compression function that we're using. And can you say anything about that? And we weren't able to say anything. And then there's, you don't have to use that function if you don't want to. So I'll first phrase it as find a small degree, a low degree map, or rational map of low degree M. And then you better find an algorithm to decompress, or it won't be very useful. I mean, I have a compression map. You just drop the y-coordinate and S0, find an algorithm to efficiently compute inverse images. And if so, if you can do that, that means you can use FQ to the phi of R cross, you know, throw in enough bits, so the ceiling of log M to represent elements of the primitive subgroup. And as a sub-question, well, just start with the compression map that we're looking at. So let's say for primes R, can you even compute the degree of the map that you get, of the compression map that we looked at? ST goes to S1. Through SR minus 1, we're here, we're again writing F, let's say, with respect to the powers of C as your basis. Okay, so that's an open question, something we don't know how to do except, you know, in the cases of 1, 2, 3, and 5. Okay, so I've saved myself, I think, just enough time to say something about pairing-friendly elliptic curves. So we've seen what's, I guess, now the classical method for producing pairing-friendly elliptic curves. And one question is, can we use these primitive subgroups to do any better? Maybe to improve on on embedding degrees for things that we already have good embedding degrees, but maybe they're not as good as we'd like, for example, so we want to do something about it. Okay, so if we want to say, so let's first deal with look at the supersingular case, and then we'll see if we can say anything in the ordinary case. Okay, so if E over FQ is supersingular, and let's take L to be a large prime divisor of the order of E of FQ, and so K is the embedding degree, which has been defined in earlier talks, embedding degree of E over FQ with respect to L, so it's the order of Q mod L by definition, let's say. And let's assume that we have an R relatively prime to 2, Q, and K. Then, okay, so then you can take E sub R, the primitive subgroup. You get an abelian variety of dimension phi of R. And we can show that L divides the order of ER of FQ, and the embedding degree of ER over FQ with respect to L is R times K, and remember that you're dealing with an abelian variety of dimension phi of R, so the relevant thing is really the embedding degree divided by the dimension. That's the security per bit. So the security per bit is R over phi of R times K. So in other words, you're starting with an elliptic curve of embedding degree K, supersingular elliptic curve, and you end up with E sub R, a supersingular abelian variety whose dimension is phi of R, which has, where you've boosted the security, you've boosted the embedding degree, essentially. So you've gained a factor of R over phi of R. So for example, so the supersingular, we know that embedding degrees are bounded. So for supersingular elliptic curves, they're bounded by 6. This allows you to go higher. So for example, when R is 5, you end up with 7.5 as the maximal embedding degree that can occur in this way. And you can end up, as we said, using this compression algorithm, you can end up just using elliptic curves without dealing with abelian varieties at all, but you have to do your arithmetic over the extension field. And I should say here that the proof uses that result that I had earlier about the characteristic polynomial and how it changes, and it uses it in the supersingular case. The characteristic polynomial of Frobenius has a particularly simple form, and that's what allows this to work in the case of supersingular abelian varieties. So you can go back and forth between the embedding degree and the characteristic polynomial of Frobenius, and everything works out nicely in the case of supersingular abelian varieties, and that doesn't happen in the ordinary case. So one question is, can you salvage anything in the ordinary case? So I don't know, and you know, presumably there aren't any good families of ordinary abelian varieties for which you can do something like this, which you can control the embedding degree as you go to the primitive, to a primitive piece. But here's a sort of a question of whether the following might or might not give you anything interesting in the case of ordinary elliptic curves. So let's say, I should say this is joint with Carl Rubin. Okay, so here's, I'm going to write down, on the face of it, looks like a proposed generalization of the classical method for finding pairing-friendly elliptic curves. And it's going to start almost identically. The whole thing is almost identical to the classical method. There's a minor change, which may or may not be helpful. Okay, so we're going to fix R small. The classical case is the case R equals 1. Case R equals 2 isn't especially interesting, so let's say, well, R is 1, you've already seen before. 3 and 5 are the ones we're going to be interested in. So this is the classical method. Okay, so step one is to find data that satisfies all of the following conditions. And this is, of course, where you then have to, you know, this is the black magic or the luck or whatever as to how do you find it. And we have not been able to successfully do this. But we're putting it out there in case somebody else wants to try. We haven't tried that hard, but we also haven't been successful. But we haven't been unsuccessful, which is why I can talk about it here. So we want a prime L that's greater than or equal to 2 to the 160. We've been unsuccessful. In fact, we haven't done it. We haven't proved that this is total nonsense yet. You want a prime Q maybe about the size of L to the 1 over phi of R, but this is, again, the condition that you can relax. The ideal case, the rho equals 1 case, is where Q is about L to the 1 over phi of R. But that's the condition you can relax, maybe, if you don't care about the ideal case. K is going to be, as always, the order of Q mod L, although it's not exactly going to be the embedding degree, but this, you want to take K in a suitable range, because you want to think of it, it's almost the embedding degree, so if you want to keep it manageable, you want it to be in some manageable range. You want a small d, this is going to be your discriminant of your CM field, positive integer d. And now here's where things are going to change a little bit. Alpha is going to be an FL cross, multiplicative group of the finite field FL, of order R. So that's where R is finally coming into things. And we also want T, or trace, okay, so T, you want an integer T that's congruent to alpha inverse plus Q alpha mod L, which if you don't like alpha inverse, that's congruent to alpha to the R minus 1 plus Q alpha. And you want 4Q minus T squared to be dy squared for some integer Y. Okay. So step two is, as in the classical case, you're going to use the CM method to find an elliptic curve E over FQ such that the characteristic polynomial of Frobenius acting on the L torsion of E is x squared minus tx plus q. Okay? So why do you want to do this? What does this produce for you? So then I claim and maybe I should actually hold on to this. Okay, so what this does for you is the following. I claim that L divides the order of, so remember the primitive subgroup E sub R, the order of E sub R, the FQ points of that, which if we've taken the ideal case, which means that condition, we could relax it if we like, but if we've taken the ideal case, that's about the size of L. K is the embedding degree for E sub R with respect to L. So K over phi of R is the security per bit, because we have a phi of R dimensional abelian variety, and you can take ER and use the Rubin-Silverberg compression algorithm if you're, say, if you have R equals 3 or 5, and what you get if you use this in pairing-based cryptography is comparable to the security of elliptic curves with embedding degree K over phi of R, because that's the security per bit. Okay, so just briefly, in the last few seconds, let me just justify these statements. Okay, so first of all, I should say the wild hope is that this extra degree of freedom alpha is going to make things easier for you when R is greater than 1. But our guess is that it's actually going to make it harder. But we don't know that for sure, and therefore let people look at this and decide whether it makes it easier or harder to have these degree of freedom alpha. So the proof is, okay, so I said that you wanted to use this result, and you use this result in one place in the supersingular case, so I haven't given you the proof there, and I'll just tell you how you use this here. So the characteristic polynomial of Frobenius for E, we said, is x squared minus tx plus q, which by our constraints is congruent to x minus alpha inverse times x minus q alpha mod L. And then we use that result, which tells us how the characteristic polynomial changes as you go from E to the primitive subgroup. And that tells us that the characteristic polynomial for the primitive subgroup is congruent to the product x minus alpha to the j minus 1, x minus q alpha to the j plus 1, where j is running over the integers from 1 to r, relatively prime to r. And this is telling us, in particular, if we take j equals 1 here, that's telling us that f er of 1 is congruent to 0 mod L. But this is the order of the absolute value, that is the order of the number of points in the abelian variety. So that says that L divides the number of points in the abelian variety, which is about the size q to the phi of r. So in our ideal case, we said that's about the size of L. The fact that k is the embedding degree is the definition. It's the order of q mod L. That's what we took it to be. So once we know that L divides the order of this group, it makes sense, then k becomes the embedding degree. And I claim that, maybe one thing I should say is when I say it's comparable to elliptic curves with its embedding degree, what I'm not taking into account is that cryptography over fq to the r with r greater than 1 might be less secure than cryptography over fp where p is prime, where p is about the same size as q to the r. So there's work of Gaudry in the abelian varieties case and Granger and Fercaterin in the multiplicative group case, which says that maybe the fact that you're looking at fq to the r where r is greater than 1, and therefore we have this sort of structure, we have these primitive pieces which you can use to attack, maybe that's making things less secure. So I'm not taking that into account here when I say this. So maybe I should say elliptic curves over extension fields with this embedding degree in order to get some sort of comparison there. Okay, so why don't I stop there and take questions. Get shorter because you compress it. So you start with, so now I'm doing DLS signatures, not E over FQ, but E over FQ to the R. And what you want to do is if you have L as a large prime divisor of the order of that, you're going to end up with the trace zero subgroup having an order R, having a point of order R. And that's what you want to, use DLS signatures for an element in the trace zero subgroup, an element of large prime order in the trace zero subgroup. Then you can use our compression algorithm to compress that point. So you do basically DLS signatures, and you drop the last one-fifth or the first one-fifth of it. So you basically take exactly the signature game. So what someone has pointed out is that, in fact, what this result is showing is that the DLS signatures, when done over extension fields, are actually not as secure as people may have thought. So not every bit is giving you security. You can just drop a fifth of it and get exactly the same security. So if you start with a point of large order in the trace zero subgroup, you use our compression algorithm, which just allows you to take a DLS signature and compress it to four-fifths of its size. So if you're over fq to the fifth now, in that case. And I can give you references for that, too.
Any comments or questions?